So a couple of summers ago, we were on the campus of Camp Marashah back in the States. My wife and I were working with Camp Yagilu, which is a Jewish outdoor wilderness camp with a lot of interesting situations that come up. Halachically, a lot of fun. This was not actually one of them, but it was related. So we had just gone out and bought a George Foreman sandwich maker type of thing, and we needed to topple it. And we knew that the lake in Marashah, the lake in camp, was topple. We were able to topple stuff there, get a mikveh there. But we did not think that our sandwich maker from Walmart would survive the process. So what did we do? So it was a late Thursday night, and we couldn't get Shabbos. Late Thursday night, we wanted to grill some salami. I guess what else are you doing on a late Thursday night? And we just really wanted salami, and we wanted to grill it, dafka. So what did we do? So we walked outside to see if we could find anyone who could help us. And the first person we see is the thankfully non-Jewish maintenance guy. This guy was the non-Jewish head of maintenance. There's obviously the guy who runs the whole program, but then he had a second in command who's a non-Jewish guy. Very, very nice. And a hard worker, good guy. Don't remember his name. And he was working in one of the what do they call them? The big pavilions. What do they call it? Oh, I was working in one of the pavilions, cleaning things up, putting away siddurim and benches and things like that, right next to our bunk. So I went down and said, hey, this is going to sound a little bit strange, but I have the sandwich maker. He's like, oh, you need me to have it, and then I'll give it back to you? I'm like, exactly. He knew exactly what was going on. I give it to him, he gives it back to me, and currently he actually owns that sandwich maker. We've been borrowing it for a very long time. At a certain point, I think 2 years later, we were going back to camp. And no, we were not just going back to camp, we were leaving our apartment before coming to Israel for the year. So we had literally packed out our entire apartment. We had loaded everything into a pickup truck. And you get to a certain point where you're just stuffing every single last thing in, and you'll find a space for that, you'll find a space for that, you'll find a space for that. So if you do that long enough, you get to a point where you literally just can't find space anymore. The feet area is already taken up, and the back area is already taken up, the middle feet is obviously already taken up. Literally every single square inch has been taken, and you actually run out of space. So we got to that point, and the last thing that was left was that sandwich maker. So unfortunately, sadly, and it wasn't ours to do, but I'm not sure how serious. So we take this, we had to leave the sandwich maker on the side of the road in Washington Heights. We turned around 10 minutes later and it was gone. Things in Washington Heights literally go like that. Even if you hadn't decided that you were done with them, they would have disappeared anyway. So that was the end of that sandwich maker, but it was a good 2 years, and we really appreciated this guy who helped us out and knew exactly what was going on. If you know Sandy, the Makola guy, he owns half of the electrical appliances in the old city, because people pull the stick with him all the time. It's something which people are aware of. So that's one of the details within Tevilas Kalim. Obviously, it comes from the need to Tovil Kalim when it goes from the ownership of a guy to a Jew, and we're going to get into that whole thing. Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the basics, basically give the basic outline.
Is that
the thought, it's one way, not the best way. One way, but not the best way. Okay, so just the background of the mitzvah. First thing you always want to ask is, are we dealing with the mitzvah d'oraisa, mitzvah d'rabbanan, what's the makor? So this comes from, the psukim which quoted come from Parshas Matos, Lamed Aleph of Gimel, by Melchanes Midian. Right, the Jews fought against Midian, they beat Midian, and a lot of the Kalim, Gemara lists, the Torah lists, six different types of materials, six different metals that these Kalim were made from. So it says there's a process that we need to go through before we would be allowed to use them. Pasuk is Ach es ha zahav v'yesa kasef es ha nechoshes v'yesa barzel es ha bedil v'yesa ofares. Those six materials, kol davar asher yavo v'esh ta'avir v'esh v'taher, anything which was used with fire should be passed through fire to become tahor. Ach v'mei midayit chata, it should also be, let's say, dunked or soaked in mei midah, which you generally seem to be mikvah water, basically water that a nida could be tovelet in. V'chol asher lo yavo v'esh ta'avir v'mayim, that which is not used with fire should instead be, let's say, dunked in water. Now there's Chav Beis and Chav Gimel. We learned two important klalim from this pasuk. Number one, the huge klal by Hechsher Kalim is Kibolo Kach Polto. The way a kli is used is also the way it needs to be kashered. A grill, which is used directly with fire, needs to be kashered through libun, directly in involvement with fire, whereas a pot, which is generally used with water, is kashered through hagala, dunking it in boiling hot water. Huge klal, kol davar asher yavo ba'esh kashir ba'esh b'shaher. The other klal is after neinida yitzchata. There's a second step in being master of these kelim. Not only do you need to be master of them, you also need to be tovel them. Right, so any time kelim are going from Jewish ownership to Jewish ownership, it needs to be told. One very interesting point, and may actually be, that would point out that we're doing this in the wrong way. We want to discuss both of these topics. We want to discuss Hefter kelim and Tevilas kelim. So there is one shita that says that if a kli needs both Hefter and Tevila, for example, a used kli from a guy, the Hefter needs to come first, afilu li'ikuva. I think that might be the shita of Rashba, not sure about that. But there is a shita that says it needs to come first in the Yikuva, and the mashal is like a very nice mashal. It's ki'ilu toveles, you're literally doing a tvila, and sheretz v'yado. It's like a person jumps into a mikvah, holding on to a dead sheretz, which is metame. But what is he accomplished by doing that? It's going to come out of the mikvah, and it's going to be just as tame as it was before. You can understand where that shita is coming from. Maybe you haven't actually found anything. The reason why that may not be true, and I think we passed in this way, I'm not positive. The reason that might not be true is because they're two very different goals. They're two very different purposes. Purpose number one is just very simply, there's a b'liya inside the kli, and you need to get that b'liya out. So there's a taste, which we assume in some way, shape, or form, is going to affect whatever you're using this kli for down the line. So I don't want that. I don't want to have trace food, taste, trace time affecting my food. So you need a master. You need to be master either with hagala or with libum. So those that would be option number one. Option number two, this is a gzera sakasa. The point of tzvila is a gzera sakasa seems to be like a symbolic change or recreating this kli in a certain way. The same way we have tzvila by a person, we also have tzvila by kelim. Kiilu saying that this kli that used to be owned by a guy is now undergoing some sort of change or transformation and is now being owned by a Jew. It's a totally different beer, it's a totally different status. It's metaphysical, it's not physical. So there, if you're taking that perspective, there's no reason why Hechsher should in any way be ma'akev tevila. There's just two totally different goals. Goal number one is to get rid of trace taste, a very physical goal-oriented process. The other one, tevila, is more metaphysical, more symbolic, a very different goal. So you can understand why it would not be ma'akev. Yeah.
What's the reason that you want to have this sort of metaphysical differentiation?
Why? You're asking the Darshan in time of the Shrub. Yeah. Why is this important?
I think that's. Right.
So
if you buy your clothing from a boy, you don't need to open it and buy a piece of which you get.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a fantastic question. Sefer HaFinuch would be a great place to look. Possible svara is just anytime dealing with achila, we see so often, it's a little bit of a different situation, but there are a lot of, I guess you could say dinim, specifically gedarim, we spoke about last week, things specifically dinim in regards to eating and drinking, and specifically when it comes to eating and drinking together with goyim, we're involving goyim, we want to have a clear, like, separation between. It could be also that the goals of non-Jew eating and drinking is so fundamentally different than the goal of a Jew eating and drinking, and we want to kind of highlight that difference through tevila, maybe. Good question. I don't really have a good answer for you, but it's a great question to ask. Okay, one of the questions that needs to be dealt with is what materials does tevila apply to? The psukim, we said, it lists six different materials. We said gold and silver, tin, what was it? Gold, silver, tin, lead, copper, and Zahab Kesef, Nechoshes, Barzel, Bedil?
Oh,
you're asking one. Bedil, one is lead and tin, or tin and lead. Correct. Six specific metals. Does this din apply only to these six metals, any kelim made from these specific metals, or anything which kind of fits into the broader category of a metal? An example would be aluminum. right? Aluminum foil pan is like the most classic cookware that you can get, chad ta'ami. So would you have to tovel, let's say, we're not chad ta'ami, we're going to deal with later, but if you had, let's say, an aluminum pan, would you have to tovel that or not? Is that deraisa? Is that derabanan? Is that not even necessary? The machlokas between the Gra and the Tiferes Yisrael, commentary on the Mishnayos, the machlokas Rishonim between Rashi and the Rambam and the Perush Mishnayos. Rashi says you only need to do those six. The Rambam and the Perush Mishnayos and the Hakam Tataros says any metal, anything that we're able to create which has the properties of a metal, you would have to be tovel. You'd have to be tovel. Nasamina Rav Moshe has an interesting tshuva. Kohanim and airplanes. This is something which hit the news like 8 years ago by now, pretty long time ago. Kohen who was choshesh for flying over a cemetery and thought that in Tumas Tara, well this is true, Tumas Tara, Tumas Mace is Ola Adlarakia. In certain situations the Tumah goes all the way up to the sky, so he thought, wait a minute, I'm going over a cemetery, I need to protect myself, and he wrapped himself, he like actually enclosed himself in a plastic bag, cut the steel at the top, and he thought that would fix him. So Rav Moshe finds he was mako on an airplane. He says that an airplane, in this type of situation, he thinks quantum are allowed to go on airplanes because aluminum is not, assuming aluminum is not mekabel tumah. Once aluminum is not mekabel tumah, it becomes chotzeis bifnei tumah. It acts as a chasita, it acts as a barrier from tumah coming in. There's also a discussion about ohel zaruk, and a moving ohel, is that actually kind of noel at all? It's a different discussion, not really for us, but that's one situation where there's not something in between how broadly we take the idea of metal. Is it related, is it limited to the things which the Torah talks about, or is it just like a general cloud with a couple of specific examples? So for us, halacha l'maaseh, Rav Moshe holds that aluminum does not need tefillah midaraisa, but does need midarabanan. The reason it can be extended midarabanan is because the Gemara itself extends to a different material midarabanan. What's the other material which does need tefillah according to the Gemara? No, not Cyrus. Glass. The Gemara says that glass needs tefillah midarabanan because it's domet to mataches. How is glass domet to mataches? They share in a very interesting quality. If I like punch a hole, if I dent, let's say a metal pan. What do I do? How do I, if I wanted to fix that? What's the best way to fix it? You melt it down and then refashion it. If we knew what we were doing, there was in Yagibu for the past couple of years, there's been a blacksmith, somebody who's literally trained in blacksmithing. He builds a forge every year. Really simple. He just uses like a hairdryer and a bunch of coal and you have like a working forge. It's wild. So he could probably take these metal pans, melt it down, and like, hey presto, you got your fresh pan, no nicks, no scratches, no dents, ready to go. It's an amazing thing. So you can do the same thing with glass. If you get fire, which is hot enough, you can melt down the glass. This is what glass blowing does. You melt down the glass, you can refashion it, do whatever you want, and then it becomes a kli again. So since they share that quality, we extended the gzera of tevilas kalim to glass meter abundance. So as Moshe said, aluminum shares that quality in the same way as glass does, and therefore we'll extend the gzera to glass midi rabbanan. Okay, so in general, anything which has properties of metal, you're going to be chayav tevilas kalim midi rabbanan. That you can still make a bracha on. We're going to see throughout tevilas kalim, there are a bunch of sfeikos that come up. Often the answer to a subject situation is tovel bli bracha.
And so what are you going to do with glass?
Yeah, tovel with a bracha. Glass, we know, tovel with a bracha. There are a bunch of like glass derivatives or things which are similar to glass. Those are open to something, and there we're going to say tovel with a bracha. Why can't you just be tovel? What do you need? Why tovel with a bracha? Let's be concerned on the other side. Subic brachas, right? And since this is most likely a mitzvah deraisa, there are some rishonim who think that it's mitzvah derabanan, that the psukim we quote is just nismasa. You can see why they would call it nismasa. It's not necessarily strictly pshat and psukim. Hafel many days chatzas, not so clear. Ta'aviv remind is not so clear. So you could see why you might want to call it an nismasa. I think the Ramban in his Perush HaTorah goes back and forth, but there are rishonim who think that it's just derabanan. Mainstream is that this is a din deraisa, so we understand why we're going to be making a bracha on it. Once you're making a bracha on the deraisa, you also make the bracha on the tahana derabanan. But once you get into suffix questions, we have suffix deraisa l'chumra, suffix derabanan l'hakma. Bracha is the suffix derabanan, so we'll just leave out the bracha. Whenever we give that instruction, the best thing to do, any suggestions? If you don't want to leave out the bracha, but you do want to tovel that kli, very good, very good. So the best thing to do would be to like have a little, if you don't need the things a la tarif, there's some things which you want to just have in your kitchen, but you don't need them right now, put them on the side, and then when you get a kli, which is actually chayav and tzvila, midi araisa, you just bring them all together, you can dunk the One, you make the bracha before you dunk the kli, which needs tevila midah, right? So you can say al tevila kli, and that will count even for multiple kelim. In general, if you do have multiple kelim, the bracha changes. It's al tevila kelim. But if you only have one kli, which is chai midah raisa, not so clear. Should I be saying keli? Should I be saying kelim? So there you can just say keli, and that'll count even for multiple kelim. So that's really the best l'chasilah thing to do. Wait till you're tovling something which is chai midah raisa, and then you can just tovle everything along with it. Pretty easy to do anyway. Just like you buy one spoon. One metal spoon, that metal spoon is like, what, it's a 3 shekel, it's not so expensive. You buy one metal spoon, that's 5 tevila midaraisa, and then you'll have your bracha you want to make for all the other kelim, whichever stuff. Okay. Fine, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was mesupuk, maybe said it's totally putter for these other metals. Halacha l'maisa, we do pass in type tovel other metals, but it's better not to make a bracha on those other metals. So, let's say metal, chayav midaraisa, glass, chayav midarabanan with the bracha, other metals, chayav midarabanan, but better to avoid making a bracha. Okay. Lead-covered tannery. What about cheret? So you say that cheret is not chayav in tevila alone. Lead-covered, lead is one of those fixed metals, so lead-covered pottery does need tevila. Shulchan Aruch makes that point. What does Shulchan Aruch not talk about? Glass-covered pottery, which is much more common for us. Glass-covered pottery, I think, what do we have? Glass-covered, I think China, general China, is covered with glass. You buy, like, fancy China for Shabbos and Yontif, that's usually covered with a very thin layer of glass. That's going to be very lamaisa for us.
What is the glass covering, or is the glass covering the cheres, or the cheres covering the glass?
Glass covering cheres. You have a cheres kli, like a cheres plate, with a thin layer of glass on top, keeps it cleaner, no scratches, doesn't break it easily. It's very useful. Shulchan Aruch only spoke about lead-covered pottery being chayav in tevila. Apparently that lead covering was significant enough to be mechayev. So that implies that glass-coated pottery would not be enough. You can understand why. If glass itself is already derabanan, and you're not so clear on how significant the covering is, then it'd be a derabanan on top of a derabanan. So you can understand why you wouldn't be mechayev there. It's a big nafkamina because there are a bunch of different types of kelim which are glazed pottery, glazed with a cover of glass. So what would the svara be? So you have two different svaros. Either glass covered china. What did we say about glass in general? Why was glass in general chayev? Because it shared that quality with metal, right? It shared the quality of being able to melt it down to fix any, if it gets broken, if it, any nicks, pagans, things like that. You can just melt it down. Can you do that with glass-covered china, with glass-covered pottery? That's not china, right? You try to melt down pottery, you're just going to get some charred pottery. You haven't actually fixed anything. That's not going to work. So therefore, you can understand why glass-covered pottery should not be chayav in tevila. Or you could say the steeper is only me derabanan, like we mentioned, and then it would be a derabanan. On top of the derabanan, they wouldn't go there that far. So midin, what do we do? The shach is on the other side. He holds that glass-covered chayret does need tevila. Rav Akiva Eiger, obviously, end of the day, you should tovel glass-covered or glazed pottery without a bracha. Suffolk, end of the day, what we usually come down to is the suffolk, you should tovel without a bracha. Porcelain is a type of chayret, but it's functionally very, very different. It's not covered by glass. It's made in a hotter fire. The second Pitzkei Tshuva says, as much as there may be a suffolk, porcelain does not need to be tevila. Pitzkei Tshuva deals with a lot of the more things which were wooden in general. Pitzkei Tshuva and Shulchan Aruch tries to collect a bunch of the Shalos Tshuvos from the time past the Mechaber and the Ramah and brings them to Keter Shulchan Aruch, very, very useful. You get a very broad range of different Shalos and things that were asked over time. So he discusses porcelain, which apparently was like some really cool secret technology brought over from China. I think that's described in the Pitzkei Tshuva, like, we don't know what this is, there's a secret procedure, and they don't tell us how to make it, but, like, I don't know if they eventually figured it out, or just, they're just seeing what it was.
So why don't you need to be that?
End of the day, it seems like it's still cheres. It's not different enough to be totally broken out of that category. On the glass situation, Rav Moshe said that the layer of glass is too thin to be able to say that it can't become straight. In a different context, we still want to talk about glass kalim for food. Rav Moshe said that if you take those china plates, you may want to argue that china plates should never become straight because there's no bleos into the glass the thin glass layer. Rav Moshe said that's a joke. It's not thick enough to actually be significant. Many Talmidim of Rav Moshe understood that to say the glass is always, for all different areas of halacha, that glass layer is basically insignificant. It's bustled to the plate itself. And that would mean that glass-covered kalim is, which should be pater, should not need. If the glass is buckled, then it's just tarias, and therefore would not need. And then the psak from the YU, this is the psak of Rosh Chester, many of the YU Rosh Yeshiva, passing that way, it's not even a suffix. According to those Rosh Yeshiva, it's actually maker adin, you don't need tevila. Minhaga olam, aside from YU, is to total those, as if it was a suffix, but if you hold like the YU Rosh Yeshiva, or many of the YU Rosh Yeshiva, including Rosh Chester, then you could, then glass-covered kalim, because, for example, China, you'd be able to get away with without tevila. Okay, so we spoke about which types of kalim need tevila. Tinda Raita was...
Because a glass-covered kalim don't need tevila.
Why Rosh Yeshiva say... Why Rosh Yeshiva say no?
Then you still have the issues of bliot in the
chet. Yes. Meaning it's a plus and minus. It's a chomer and kulam. There's one shita that we mentioned when we spoke about this who tries to get the best of both worlds and says that it's not significant enough for tevila, but it is significant enough for bliyos. That there's a famous or infamous Rav Abadi, who's actually one of a Rosh Yeshiva or something in Lakewood, who is famous for incredible kulas. Incredible kulas, and one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, Rav Simon, is like a Talmud Muvak, he quotes them all the time. So he has this shita that you can kind of like get the best of both worlds. Yes, glass, no glass, it's sometimes funny to hear. But that's Rav Abadi, it's a famous name out there if you're looking for important kulas. Yeah, I got it.
Well,
it
has to do with
the kulas,
so when you're saying that it's the whole kulas is something that's metaphysical.
Oh, great question. So you are correct. It seems like the Talmidim of Ramosha took what he was saying as a statement about that glass cover in general. Is that glass significant or totally insignificant? And it wasn't just a statement limited to Blios, it was just like, how do we see this very thin layer of glass? Chashuv or not chashuv? Once it's seen it's not chashuv, that has multiple hashlachot, that has multiple implications for different areas of halacha.
But then if you're going to have chashuv, would it be significant enough for bleos?
Yes, and that would be a problem. Meaning, no, it's not that the glass is significant. The glass is insignificant, and therefore it's a bleos in the chair. Right? We assume, to a certain extent, we assume that glass is not bleos. So if it was significant, then that's actually a kula linyan blios and a chumra linyan tevila. If you assume the glass is insignificant, it's a kula for tevila, but a chumra for blios.
Right?
And Rav Shether obviously is consistent. He says that it's a kula for tevila, but a chumra for blios. This Rav Abadi apparently says you can get both kulos. You can call it significant for A, but insignificant for B. Okay, so we spoke about the different materials which need tevila. The metal in general is what's described in the pasuk. Machlokas, if it's the thick metals or all metals in general. Glass, the Gemara X is explicit about. Glass needs tevila midirabanan. And all these other metals was a question. And then glass-covered pottery, Shulchan Aruch left it out, implying that you would not need. You can understand why you would think it does need. End of the day, the Pesach of the Rosh Yeshiva from YU, including Rav Shechter, is that glass-covered kalim do not need minhag olam. It's important to be aware. Minhag olam is that glass-covered chayres does need. Okay. Now, where are you meant to be tovling in? In general, where does tevila happen? So the same dinim, which applies to tevilas adam, also applies to tevilas kalim. The tevila can be done in either a mikvah or a mayan. A mikvah is some sort of earthbound concentration of Negeshem, rainwater. A mayan is flowing natural water that comes from the ground. The spring is easy one if the water is coming from above or coming from down below. If the water is coming from above, then it's a mikvah. If the water is coming from down below, it's a mayan. And there are not minas between them. We're not going to do a whole mikvah here. You come to Gerus and do 4th-year Alef Lamaisa. You get like 4 weeks on it. But it's important to be aware there are differences. One of the differences are a mikvah is only mitahir when the water is like stagnant, it's contained, and the water's not leaking out. It's actually one of the big things you need to be aware of in a mikvah, to make sure that there's no like crack or hole in a standard mikvah, because as long as the water's leaking out, then maybe you've stooled the entire mikvah. But obviously a mayan, in general, mayanot are rushing, mayanot are moving, and you can obviously be tovel that way. So that you should just be aware of where you're toveling, and some of the dinim in regards to that. 40 saw, a mikvah needs to be 40 saw in order for it to be kosher. The size, the 40 saw is an amma by an amma, berum gimel amos, the height of 3 amos. Why is that height significant? Why do they choose that height? Where did that height come from?
Good.
Very good. So I was once, this is Shana Aleph, Shana Aleph Ben Azman. A bunch of my friends went to Masada. We camped out right outside Masada. Made a fire, brought some remaining salami, it was kishmak, and we slept out overnight right by Masada, and then the next morning we hiked up and down the chicken in the top of Masada, kishmak at times, kishabrel, end of the day. So we were walking around on top of Masada, checking things out. It was my first and only time there, I think. And one of the things that we saw was either like there, I guess, it wasn't any houses there, it was a remains a room. Basically, we saw there's a room there with a couple of steps down and like this tiny little rectangle at the bottom of the stairs. And we're like, what is this? What could this be? It's like a tiny little storehouse. And one of my friends figured out that this was like a tiny personal mikvah. You had the stairs down, mikvah was right there, you came right back upstairs. Doesn't need to have any space, you don't need to turn around space. It's like you're the only one using it. And it literally like fit the person's body. If you crouch down, you get low, you put your hands over your head, whatever it is, it fits the person's body. It's an amma by an amma, birum gimel amma. So you need a little bit more space because when you go into a pool of water, the water level rises, whatever that's called. So it's not literally that size, but it's basically based on the size of a normal, standard human being. So that's a good way just like to eyeball, is this mikvah going to be large enough? Generally, if you're an established mikvah, of course it's going to be large enough. Amma by amma, berum gimel amma, so 40 saw. It's a question if you need the same shear by a mayan. It's not as clear if that shear is necessary. It's a big discussion by Tfilas Adam and by Tfilas Kalim for Fatum Vitara. So that's a little bit of an open question. I think in terms of fact we hold, we assume that you do need 40 saw even for a mayan, but that's definitely something which is debated. Okay. That stuff we're going to skip. It doesn't really come up so often. Okay, what types of kalim need to be toveled? So the only, the klal gadola, I guess you could say that the baseline is klei suda. The only things that you need, tevila is things which are being used in the context of a meal. That can be a little bit hard to define. We generally assume you need two things. Number one, it's used directly for food, either the food itself or food preparation, and comes in contact with food. An example is you have like a standard mixer, right? So a mixer is mechulek l'shnayim. It's two parts. There's the guf of the mixer, there's the engine, there's the thing which makes everything move around, and then there are the kalim that are attached to the end that actually like involves the food. So there you don't need a tovel, the guf of the mixer, you don't need a tovel, the huge heavy thing. Your mother has to slap out the counter every time she wants to use it. What you do need a tovel is the bowl, and the things which actually go around and make the dough, mix the food, things like that. Much, much simpler, right? Thank God we made that rule. That was very smart. Much more convenient. Another example, an oven, right? If you're using an oven normally, the food is not coming in contact with the oven itself. The oven is there as a kli to contain the heat, but it's not actually coming in contact with the food. So the oven does not need tevila. However, the rack, if you're one of those people who actually put the food directly on the rack as opposed to only using it to hold pans, then the rack would need tevila. For example, if you like making toast on the rack of your oven, then right there, you're now using your rack of the oven as klei suda, they're coming in direct contact with the food for food preparation, and they would need tevila. If you really never use the rack directly, they're always there just to hold pots, hold pans, whatever it is, to hold pans, then again, they're not coming in contact with the food, and therefore would not be called klei suda, would not need tevila. It's a little bit of an open question if you use the rack with like tinfoil on top, or you like a baking sheet, parchment paper. So on one sense, you're not using the rack directly. In the other sense, like, come on, it's just like a thin layer of tinfoil. What you're really using is what's really holding up the food, what you're really using is the rack itself. That's a little bit open. And the chatzila there is better to be tovel, but it's not doable, it's not convenient, whatever it is. If you're not able to do that, then you can get away without being tovel if you use it in that sort of way. Best thing to do if you're gonna be using it that way is to tovel together with all the others, to get together with other tables. Other examples of clay sukkah. Let's say a can opener. What do you guys think? Yes or no?
Yeah,
no, we have a yes, we have a maybe.
Touch the food a little bit.
Okay, might touch the food, but in terms of purpose, what are you doing with it? What's the purpose of a can opener? Is it preparing the food or is it just giving you access to the food?
Giving you access.
Giving you access. So we generally assume that a can opener does not need to be allowed because it's not actually changing the food, preparing the food, doing anything to the food. It's just you're stuck. You can't get to the food is inside this really tightly sealed container and you want to get there. How do you get there? You can either stand there with a rock pounding it as often as you can for like 5 minutes and it'll open up, or you could just use this really cool invention called a can opener. But you're not preparing the food, you're just getting access to the food. And even though Eitan's right, it often you will be touching the food itself, because the can opener will often come in contact, just because it's slightly coming in contact does is not monitor that as food prep. It doesn't change the definition, and therefore we don't really care that it comes in contact with the food. So that's a fascinating question. That's a really cool question. Does the can itself need to be locked? So it becomes a question after you've used it and you want to use it again. If you are one of those people, thrifty, whatever it is, who are trying to save money, and you, like, why should I throw out a perfectly good metal cleat that's going to last for 100 years? These things literally do last for 100 years. Again, Yagilu, we go for, like, we live in the woods, we do stuff in the woods, and they're these metal palings, which everything is, like, totally rusted, the labels rotted away, and everything like that, but, like, the cleat is totally fine. It's still very strong, you can do whatever you need to do. So why should I throw this away? I can use this to store tomato sauce, I can use this to store whatever it is. You can use this as storage, as clay suda. It's clean, it's perfectly good, why should I toss this? So if that's your mindset, there actually is a theoretical chance you might have to be due to the law. One svarah as to why you would not have to do tefillah is because when the kli is created, it's created sealed. And it's not really usable in any way, shape, or form. Once you open it, if it's a pop top or you, not a pop, like the metal top, they're scored, but you actually have to open it, or if you use a can opener to open the top, then who's actually making this kli into a kli? You are, the Jew. So that means that if it's becoming a kli and under your ownership or by you, then it actually does not need to be left kalim because it's not created by a guy. It's coming into existence as a kli created by a Jew, owned by a Jew. So that's one way to get around it. But there are those who say for other kalim. We talk about this for aluminum foil pans. In fact, aluminum foil pans, like our created Israeli ones, not so much, but the American ones are just generally better quality, and you could use them for much, much longer. Maybe you should have to tow an aluminum foil pan if you wanted to use them multiple times. We generally assume no. Even the American ones, after like 10 times, it's going to start losing its shape, breaking down, getting weak, getting gross, things like that. So something which has a din of disposable, a din of chad tami, even if you use it like asara pamim, eventually you're going to have to throw it out, as opposed to like a real salad. Like a gizantakli, that's something which you're going to keep using so that you would have to do shilan. So it depends a little bit on the kli, how it's coming into existence, things like that. You buy it and you sort of throw it out. I think minhag olam is to toss it, even if you're one of those weird people who use it often, it doesn't change the definition of the kli. And the way we know that is because even those strange people who use it so often, even they are limited to like 10 uses. They're not going to get so much more out of what's been generally mugdar as disposable. One big question, a huge question, Snapple bottle. Used to be glass, now they switched to plastic, so it's not a question anymore. But back in the day, back in the good old days,
they brought like the wine bottles, like the rear filled up with water.
But I guess so. No one's like really like slipping on the glass wine bottle as like their water bottle for the week, you know? So for Snapple bottles, people would like keep that around for a long time. So now it's their shape and whatever it is. Apparently those were really well used. So back in the day when I don't know, Snapple didn't care about the environment or did care about the environment, I don't know which one, where all this, it was just like a terrible idea. I think for my family alone, when we'd like go out to restaurants, the big treat was bottles of Snapple, and like, not every time, but and often enough that I have this like clear memory in my head of one of the younger siblings just like pushing the bottle. So like we were playing it, pushing it back and forth, just like pushing it. The thing like slides off because these tabletops are always incredibly slidey. Slippery. And smashing on the floor. And like, oh my god, horrible. It's their fault for making glass things that everyone's supposed to just use. It's just a silly idea. Glass plastic is obviously much better. So apparently they're, well, it's because it tastes better, is that a thing? I guess I'm not a connoisseur. Apparently because it tastes better, that would be one reason. But There's a huge machlokes apparently about glass Snapple bottles. Maybe even you would have to do tevila before drinking what's inside, because you're using clay akum as clay suda. Maybe the second you open it, you should have to pour out the drink and do tevila on the bottle and then pour the liquid back in. We spoke about that. We're not going to get into it. It doesn't seem to be necessary. The question is exactly why not. There are like six different svaros as possible reasons. We're not going to get into them, but you can drink your schnapple.
I think it was Chef who said because like for the non-Jewish, like if you're going to the store and go to the cashier, it's useless to them. They're not going to actually, there's no value to the actual bottle itself.
Okay, therefore what? It's still a kli though. Like, just because he doesn't care about it doesn't mean it's not a kli. It's still a kli. It's still the aim. It's still in front of your face. It's an interesting thing, yeah.
Old plastic.
So plastic is not one of those three things you spoke about. Plastic does not need tequila. Yes, it's an interesting point, but I think generally we assume that it doesn't need. There are those who are mouth rates over plastic, but I think the general practice is that it doesn't need, does not need at all. I don't want to skip all the way to electricity. We can talk about it. Okay, so when you talk about electric kalim, we mentioned at the beginning, what is the deal with electric kalim? Let's say they have a metal inside, a kumkum. Great example. Kumkum has electricity on the outside and the metal kli part on the inside heats up the water very, very quick. Very cool, you can make pasta inside. You do have to tovel metal kalim. What's the obvious problem? You don't put electricity in water. So first of all, it's important to be machalic between electronics and electric kalim. Electronics are things which have like a kilo of brain inside a computer inside, Nespresso machines, Keurigs, things like that. There's like a motherboard in there that if you put that in water, that will literally get fried. That will quickly be broken. That's going to be much more of a problem. Electric kalim are just things which have circuitry inside, but no like motherboard, no brain. Those are usually a lot simpler. Rav Benarsh told us, Eidus Ne'amana, he has tovled many, many electric kalim over the years. He basically said, you dunk it in the water, normally pull it out, let it sit for like 3 full days, don't touch it, don't plug it in, don't try to turn it on, just let it sit and dry out for like a good solid 3 days, 72 hours. And he has said that he's never had any problems. He hasn't had any kalim break on him. From Tevila, he's never had any kalim breaking him from Tevila, and therefore he's comfortable telling people that they should be doing Tevila on electric kalim, because he's done it himself and he hasn't had problems. Electronics are a different story, a lot more difficult, a lot more dangerous. If you understand what's going on with the electricity, basically you're connecting circuits. So if there's no power, there's no electricity in the circuitry, the water can make, okay, I'm not an electrician, but the water cannot close the circuits and then like fry things, make things run at powers or speeds that are not supposed to be running. Again, I'm not an electrician, I don't really understand this stuff yet, but that's not possible if the kli has never been plugged in and you're not plugging it in until the water has dried out. So those are, as long as you have those two things, you should be comfortable be doing tevila on even electric kalim, and just let them sit for 72 hours to dry out. If you did plug it in once, that means that there is residual electricity inside the kli. Very important to recognize that even if it's not currently plugged in, there is still residual electricity inside the circuit, inside the electric kli, and therefore you may run into problems. You may run into problems doing tevila. What do you do there? I don't know. That's just like a practical question. If there's a way to get rid of that residual electricity, it's a question of how much time. I don't know what you can do. I know with phones even. Yeah, if you take your battery out of your phone, there is still residual electricity, and if you hold the off button for an extra 10 seconds, that drains out the extra electricity. This is a real thing, and it can really mess up your stuff if it then gets wet. So make sure that you don't use it, don't plug it in, don't do anything. The first thing you should be doing is bring it straight to the mikvah, dunk it, and then bring it home. Let it dry out for 3 days. There was one svara that said that anything which is plugged in, is Chelkas Yaakov, they said that anything which is plugged in has the din of mechubah l'karka. And mechubah l'karka ain't tzarich tevila. You can't really have a kli, which is mechubah l'karka. It changes its status. Yeah, and that would not need to be law. Chazanish actually has that as a chumra in Hilchos Shabbos, and he says that there's a difference between binyan b'kelim and binyan b'mechuv l'karka. We basically generally say ain binyan b'kelim, but once you have something which is mechuv l'karka, you do have binyan, and you do have binyan midarais, and that's going to be much more of a problem. Okay, so that everyone, nobody really likes that stuff with Yaakov. We usually generally don't rely on it. Rav Schechter, very interesting, says that since Tevilas Kalim as a whole is phrased as a mitzvah as opposed to an iser, meaning it's a mitzvah to do tefillah as opposed to an iser to use Kalim which have not been told, it only applies to things which are shy after the mitzvah. It only applies to situations where the mitzvah can be done. And if the mitzvah is you cannot tovel electric kalim, it must be the mitzvah doesn't apply to them. So Rav Benar says he likes the lumdus, but practically it's just not true. There's no practical issue with, as his own experience can attest to, there's no practical issue with toveling electric kalim, and therefore the mitzvah is shy to them just as much as shy to everything else. So the lumdus is interesting, it's just the mitzvah is not true. However, that does apply, like we said, to electronics. Q-rigs, anything with a computer inside, a motherboard inside, that's where it's going to be a problem. Q-rigs are even different. Q-rigs, the metal part is actually not exposed to the air. You can dump it, you can dunk it as many times as you want to. You're going to be messing up the computer, and you're not even getting the water in the mikvah to interact with the piece which is actually interacting with the food, with the liquid. So there, you can apply your shechter svara a lot more. It's just the mitzvah is not even shayach, and therefore you'd be putter from that svara. If possible, it's still better to do the harama of giving it to a guy and borrowing it back, but even though in general we don't like relying on that, here you have two snifim, you have your shechter, and obviously that other workaround, so that would be better.
I think that when he gives it back to you, it becomes yours.
No, it's not yours. When you're using a goy's kli that's still his, you don't need tevila. You only need tevila when it's transferring ownership from a goy's kli to a Jew's kli.
And that has it gone back that where Mendes was a good reason for it not, and we said that fine, even though we don't know, we try to bring it as far as saying that it's because eating and not getting close to goy's. Isn't it totally like...
On the one hand, yes, you're right. On the other hand, it's important for you to recognize that this is not yours. Like it has not underrun that change from, let's say, a guy's usage to a Jew's usage. It's still owned by a guy. I mean, the point is we're trying to symbolize or symbolically point out this difference in purpose, so like there is no difference in purpose, it still is. You haven't taken ownership. In a normal situation, you can understand why that's powerful. The fact that it leaves open a workaround, it leaves open a loophole, okay, it leaves open a loophole, that's not something which is necessarily a bad thing. But the loophole is obviously not going to highlight the point of the mitzvah. The main use case is what's going to highlight the point of the mitzvah. Okay, we spoke about which materials need tevila, how you do tevila, where you do the tevila kalim. We spoke a little bit about electronic kalim. There are a few other topics we want to cover, so we'll probably have another week on tevila, then maybe a week on hechsher kalim, and a couple of smaller topics. Go ahead.